listen to the Christ and Pop Culture Digest. I'm your host, staff writer Drew Dixon, and we have a very special show for you. I have two guests with me today. One is Mary McCampbell. Hey, Mary, how are you?
Hey, doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are a professor?
Yes.
At what university, remind me?
I'm a professor at Lee University in Cleveland, Tennessee.
Cool. Just outside of Chattanooga, right?
Yes. Very close.
And you teach? What do you teach?
I'm in the humanities department, and particularly I focus on postmodern fiction and culture and film.
Cool. Sounds smart. Like you do smart things. we have another special guest with us today, and that's in light of having Mary on because she wrote an article about a gentleman that we have the honor of having on the show as well, Officer Tommy Norman. Hey, Tommy, how are you?
Hey, how you doing? Thank you so much for having me on. It's a big honor.
Yeah, absolutely. We're thrilled that you could come on. And so I want to talk to you quite a bit, Tommy, about kind of your story and everything. But Mary, I'd like to hear from you first, kind of because you wrote a feature that was kind of one of the more popular features on our site in quite a while, I think. They got tweeted by some famous rappers, so now that means that you're like famous. Killer Mike retweeted your piece, which I just thought was really cool. Maybe we're super jealous of you. But you wrote an article about Tommy. Tell us about the impetus behind the article and how you kind of got to know Tommy a little bit and got a chance to talk to him about his work in Little Rock.
Okay. I mean, do you want me to kind of explain more of what compelled me to want to contact him
or
happened when I contacted him?
Start with what compelled you to contact Officer Norman.
Yeah, I mean,
or should we call you Tommy? Sorry, I keep wanting to say Officer Norman, like you just pulled me over for a ticket or something.
Tommy's fine. Tommy's
fine. Okay. All right. Good. Cool.
Just with the events in the past year, so much going on in the country, dealing with race and violence and all kinds of things, and I was just. I don't know. I've been kind of heartbroken over the past year over it, and particularly by a lot of I'm a glutton for punishment, and I tend to leave lots of online comments, which is really stupid. I just felt like kind of the general sense of responses to like a lot of Black voices was basically a very much a lack of empathy, and even some very covert and overt racism. And I mean, I always knew that was there, but to see how prevalent it was, and particularly in spaces like Lecrae's Facebook page, where he'd post something that was even not very controversial, even something like the March on Selma, and he would kind of attacked for being divisive. Really upset about that. And I was teaching a class and reading an essay by reading part of Cornel West's book, Race Matters. And he's talking about a sense of kind of despair in the inner city. And he talks about what he calls Black nihilism, a sense of hopelessness and despair. And he talks a lot about different ways to try to approach that and how do we deal with it. And basically his main conclusion, at least in this particular chapter, is that the only way for people to really be able to kind of have, be rejuvenated and for their hearts to change, for them to really have a sense of confidence and hope is for them to feel loved.
Yeah.
And Cornel West famously says, justice is love in public, and that he talked about systemic changes that show that this group of people are loved, but he's also talking on a personal level. And so right in the midst of that, there's also a song by The Roots that was really impacted me a lot that called How We Got Over, that has to do with a sense of just hopelessness and carrying the burden, the weight of that despair kind of in the inner city. And so right in the midst of that, I came across Thistle, the rapper, had did a picture up of Tommy Norman with all these kids in the inner city where he patrols, and I was really intrigued, like, whoa, what is this? Like, I was surprised, and I went and started following his Instagram, and I don't know, I was just deeply moved by it and really given a sense of hope of this is a model of policing that is actually showing the individuals that you come into contact every day that you love them. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was seeing right before my eyes Cornel West's theory that, you know, showing love to people is actually what helps them, you know, the transformation occur. And I was even noticing even more that or just as much that the people writing comments on his page, I mean, this is really amazing. If anybody goes and looks at his Instagram page, which you all should, read the comments, because you'll see comments like, there you go again, making the gangster cry. You see individuals who say, you know, I always thought the cops hated me, or I always hated the cops, and now I see, yeah, I don't know, it's just like individuals seeing authenticity and love really changes. You know, I mean, God changes people's hearts, but I think the work Tommy does, you know, showing that kind of love, it's just, mm-hmm. I mean, you can't deny it when you see it right in front of your eyes. So I was like, I have to talk to this person. I mean, I really want to see more of this and understand it. And so I just wrote him and said, I'm going to be in Memphis visiting my mother. Can my mom and I make a day trip and I can come interview you? And he says, yeah. So that's what it did. We went to the police department in North Little Rock, and that's the rest is history, I guess. So kind of a long weekend, but there you go.
Yeah.
You can delete them.
And you weren't reticent at all to meet with Mary, Tommy?
Oh, no, it was a big honor. And I mentioned it over and over and over, the fact that, you know, she drove from Chattanooga to Memphis and Memphis to North Little Rock. You know, I didn't take that lightly in the police department. You know, we were thrilled to have her and kind of be our guest for the day. And she also brought me some pretty addictive chocolate cookies as well.
That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Some English biscuits. And I didn't know that I'd go in and meet the chief of police. That was a little kind of awe-inspiring.
Yeah, you're doing all kinds of cool things, meeting the chief of police, and you got cool rappers tweeting your stuff.
Exactly. I just have connections in high places now.
So your article was called Policing with Embrace, How Officer Norman Loves His Community. And so you go through in this article and talking to Tommy about just different things he's done in the community in Little Rock to kind of change, I think, people's perceptions, I think, in a lot of ways. Is that, Tom, would you say, is that what you've set out to do, is to change people's perceptions, or is it simpler than that for you, kind of your approach to policing?
Well, to change people's perception of how they view police officers, you know, I'll start from the beginning of my career in 1998, out of the police academy. You know, I noticed a lot of people, when I would wave or honk my horn, you know, they would turn their heads or they would ignore me. And I didn't like that. Yeah, I knew that being a police officer, there was numerous opportunities to go out and make a difference in the community. And at first, as I mentioned to Mary and shared with her, that I thought a honk and a wave would do it. But it took a lot more than that. And so mm-hmm. so part of my goal was to change the perception of how, you know, the community viewed the police. And you know, after over 17 years, it's been a big success.
Yeah. So, in what ways has it been? I mean, obviously, like, I think I've just recently kind of started following your Instagram account, and seeing some of the examples of that. But in what ways have you kind of changed people's perceptions? Like, what are some of those successes?
Well, it starts with the kids, and when you have a group of kids see a police car turn down their street, and instead of running into their house or running, you know, behind the house, you know, they'll run to the police car, literally, you know, swarm on your car. They're trying to get in your car. You know, they want to touch you. They want to shake your hand. You know, you're a real life hero. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest testimonies that I can share is with the kids, but even with the adults. You know, there are people in the community such as the Debras and the Jays and the Willies and the Aarons, and these are people that are You know, they're adults. They're some of them are elderly, you know, and they expect your visit and get excited about your visit just as much as the kids do. So there you see the results and how it all plays out when a police officer, a police department is involved every single day. You see those kind of results.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so I'd be curious to hear, like, because I think, like, obviously a lot of police officers don't get the kind of response from people in the districts that they, the areas that they patrol, that you do. Do you feel like the police in our country in some ways are, like what would you say if you could have, like, a national platform to speak to sort of law enforcement in our country about how to earn the respect of people? I mean, is that something that all police officers should be striving to do on some level?
Yes. And I think that most police departments, the majority of them do that. You know,
yeah,
just,
I do
a
too.
A lot of them aren't, they're not featured on social media. And yeah, I'll say this, that you know, that not officers, not many officers, take their work to social media. I did it for the goal of inspiring other people, not just police officers, to go out and make a difference. But if I had a national platform to speak to officers, you know, across the world, I would say that you have to love your community. Now, can you still enforce a law? Can you still write tickets? Can you still make arrests? Yes. And, you know, that's the primary job of a police officer, but you also can love the community, you know, care for them, and tell people you love them. I mean, I'll tell people, kids, adults, every day when I'm at work, you know, hey, I love you.
Yeah.
And these are citizens. These aren't family members. These aren't, you know, close friends. These are people that may see me a few times out of the week, out of the month. But one of the last things I say to them is, you know, I love you. And so to hear that come from a police officer in a uniform, a police car, a person with that much authority, you know, that really sets deep into their heart and it makes a big, big difference.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the, like, kind of parallels that, or one of the things I think about with your story is, I think anytime any of us have, like, some bit of power, even, like, for me, like, I think about this with my kids, like, they respect me because I'm their dad, right, on some level.
Right.
And it's so easy to, it's weird to have that sort of power over them, but to know how to use it well. Like, and I think police officers, obviously you have power on some level that society has given to you, that the government has given to you. You know, and I think there's, with any kind of power that we have, there's a temptation to, you know, misuse it or use it in a way that there's a right use of it, right? That's good and helps people and helps society and protects. And then there's a temptation to use it in a way. And we've seen, like, lots of examples, right? And at least in the media, of ways that it may, maybe that it's possible anyway, that that's gotten out of hand. Right. So how do you balance that and constantly make sure that you're wielding the power that the state, you know, of Arkansas has given you in a way that's loving and is helping the community. Is that something you think about?
Well, with me, as I said before, I've been an officer for over 17 years now. So I've already established a positive rapport mm-hmm. in the community. But what also helps is I grew up in the same community. You know, and that's really helpful. A lot of the people in the city of North Little Rock already know or knew of me because, you know, I grew up there. I played sports there. I worked there. You know, I live there. And so that was really beneficial, to me, is because, you know, that's my hometown. And, you know, when a police officer ends up policing the town that he grew up in, that's a big plus. You know, you have some officers that come from other parts of Arkansas or other parts of the United States, and they come to police there. They can still have a big impact.
Yeah.
But I think you're going to have a bigger impact being from that community. So as far as, you know, the power you have and how you implement love and mix it up with that power, you know, it takes a lot of hard work. It takes you getting out of your patrol car, even if it's 2 minutes, but consistency and commitment, you know, is the key. But once a community sees that you mean business, that you're going to keep your end of the deal, and you'll come through there every day, whether it's a nursing home, whether it's a high rise that the senior citizens live in, whether it's a daycare, whether it's a gas station, you stop in a barbershop, you know, it's not, you go to different merchants and you visit them. And so, you know, they say that familiar your face every day, you're going to gain a lot of respect. And so, you know, there's a lot of different ways to approach policing, and there's opportunities every single day from the beginning of my shift at 5:45 in the morning, you know, until it ends, you know, and even after that, you're a police officer 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, you're helping people all the time, even when you're off the clock and you're out of the police car.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things I've been impressed by, just looking at your Instagram account, is how often, you're not in uniform and you're still out there, you know, showing love to people in really tangible ways. It's incredibly inspiring to me. I'd be curious to hear, like, because I think there's probably a lot of people that don't do the kinds of, you know, show love to people in the kinds of ways in the inner city, in the kinds of ways that you do. And I think maybe part of the reason they don't is because there's a hump you have to get over to do that. You know what I mean? Like, it's uncomfortable to step out and do that. So I'd just be curious for you, like, was it intimidating for you to kind of start to build, to take those first steps to build relationships with the people in your community? And how'd you get over that kind of, or maybe you're one of those weird people that doesn't, that doesn't worry about those things at all, but, that's not me. I worry about those things. And I think that's most people. So how did you get over it? And maybe you have some insight in how other people can get over their kind of, you know, get out of your comfort zone, get out of your fear of.
Do you mean like in dealing with difference? Do you mean like.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And dealing
approaching
with
a community. Like the fact if I just walked into a community like the one Tommy polices, you know, that, and I'm clearly very different than the people there. How do I get over that?
Yep.
Kind of what.
Yeah. I'm curious. Yeah.
I was intimidated at first, even though I was from that community. I didn't live in the inner city. I didn't live in the poor neighborhoods that I patrolled when I became a police officer and my career started, especially outside of the, out of the academy. You know, I'm on my own. Nobody else is in the car with me. You know, I pretty much can police how I want to police. I don't have another officer, a training officer telling me what to do. So, it was intimidating at first. I would park my police car and do foot patrol. And people would walk in their houses and close the door, and it would probably be easier for me to get back in my patrol car and just give up and say, okay, this is not going to work out. But you have to keep going, and you sit on those front porches, you give people your business card with your cell phone number on there. In order to overcome that intimidation factor, you just got to keep going. You got to keep going and going. And once you do that, and the community realizes, okay, this officer's not giving up. You know, he's not going to take no for an answer, so to speak. And as I said, it's not going to happen overnight. In order to overcome that, it's going to make your job easier. You know, if you stay in your car and you drive down the main streets every day and you don't get off in the inner city, then you're not going to form relationships. You're not going to earn the trust from people. So if you overcome that initial intimidation that you may feel, it's going to make your job easier, you know, in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's a really great word because, you know, I think truly loving other people takes persistence. It takes takes time. You know, there's that that saying. I think it's really true that you spell love T-I-M-E. You know, and it's the time you invest that shows that you're really committed.
Yeah, that's powerful. Yes, it is. Yeah. Time.
Yeah. It sounds like you're really intentional. You know, it's like I'm gonna do this. You know, very, very intentional, and it sounds like it would have been a lot easier for, yeah, I mean, you already said that, but I'm just thinking about how that can apply to our day-to-day life, even if we're not in your position as a police officer, that there are times when you think, should I walk up to that person, you know, and speak to that person who looks actually like they, you know, could use someone to talk to them, but it's really uncomfortable. It's out of my comfort zone. But it's that idea of being intentional. That's,
yeah.
I don't know. That's just hard to do in a, on a day-to-day basis regularly, you know, so mm-hmm. that's.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mary, I'd also be curious to hear from you. You got to sit down with Tommy for a long time and chat with him about all kinds of things that we don't have time to talk about on the show. What did you learn in your time from Tommy? If you could kind of narrow it down
to
a few sound bites.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I really thought a lot about after was the idea of just in asking myself, do I tend to move towards people that I only think have something to offer me back?
Mm-hmm.
I was really convicted by that, you know, because I was just thinking about, I mean, I feel like when I see what Tommy does, there's a sense of, you know, everybody says for everybody is a person that you can love, and that if you show them love, it could be a part of changing their lives, you know? And I mean, and that really, I think, has to do with, you know, seeing the image of God in another person. And so I was just thinking, you know, asking hard questions about who do I move towards in friendship, and do I just move towards them because of what they can give me back initially, you know, and sometimes on maybe even on superficial levels, you know? So I don't know. That's just one. I mean, there are many things that I've learned, but that's definitely one big one.
So. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, is that, have you passed any, I mean, you're a teacher, so, and you're teaching in the humanities and those kinds of things. So
yeah.
Have you passed on any of this to your students? Like, what does that look like? I'm curious.
Yeah, I have. I mean, just yesterday I was talking. I have a kind of introductory PowerPoint where I'm kind of giving basic, kind of teaching basic principles of, like, theology of culture.
Yeah.
And how do we engage culture. And one of my big points was about empathy and about how listening to the stories of others can encourage, can really help us to be more empathetic with them. It's very easy to label and dismiss people and to just project ideas on them rather than hearing them. And so I used his Instagram and showing the way he is. I mean, I feel like he often is subverting stereotypes. You know, and he's allowing people to have a voice on Instagram. Like, he's showing them, you know, really showing them with dignity and showing kind of the beauty of who they are. And also, I know Tommy had talked with me about, you know, sitting down and hearing people's stories. And mm-hmm. I don't know. So I feel like his whole Instagram account encourages us to want to be empathetic and to want to see a common humanity in other people, even if they look different, even if they have different backgrounds. So I use that a bit because I was talking about just the nature of storytelling, how, you know, that leads to empathy. And so I gave this kind of particular example alongside some Shakespeare and some other things. I'm
of course.
About, you know?
Sure.
But that's just one thing that I'm sure we'll talk, probably revisit it in other contexts. They were very excited. One student raised her hand and said, can you invite him to come speak in chapel? So... they really kind of came alive.
Yeah, you got to make that happen.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
So, yeah, I think that's a really good point because, like, we've talked about the issue of race on this podcast quite a bit and, like, race relations in our country and all those kinds of things on this podcast lately because it's just one of those issues you can't really ignore in our culture right now, I think. So that's in part why I've talked about it. But one of the things that several people who are smarter and kinder and better people than I am have constantly said with regard to these issues is that the most important thing for us to strive to do as followers of Christ, as human beings, is to listen to the stories of others, like, and to take them seriously.
Absolutely.
And, you know, because I think we always want to, if we see injustice in the world, like, I think there's this knee-jerk thing to say, like, okay, what do I need to do? Like, what do I need to do? How can I give money? How can I, you know, what can I do to, like, get my hands dirty and do something? And a lot of times I think before we do anything, it's important that we listen and hear people out. And Tommy, I think, like, from reading Mary's article and from chatting with you, I think you're a great example of that, of someone who has, you know, the power to enforce the law in Little Rock, and yet you're constantly striving to hear out and hear the stories of the people that you're called to serve and protect. And that's so encouraging to me. So
I really do appreciate that. It means a lot to me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, sorry, go ahead, Mary.
Oh, sorry. Well, no, I was just going to mention, I mean, to me, that's why, again, back to that example of that Cornel West thing of the politics of conversion, just that idea of, I mean, I feel like the power of seeing, you know, a white male authority figure, you know, a policeman taking the time to go in within a neighborhood that he's got, inner city neighborhood, and like sitting down and to me, it's just such, again, this outpouring of love, like just being still and like listening to people and like taking time with them. So I don't know. Yeah. That's just really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Those kinds of, you know, small, but important conversations are an incredibly important step, I think, in our country right now. I mean, yeah, it's huge. So, Tommy, we're kind of running out of time. Can you tell us a story or two of kind of some impact you've seen through the work you're doing in Little Rock, that maybe one that's not in the article?
Well, you know, there are plenty of stories. You know, you got your Debras and Jays, and gosh, you've seen, you know, a lot of the individuals that live in the community that I patrol. I think the early on in my career, I'm not sure if this is in the article or not, but there was a gentleman that lives in Little Rock. He's a homeless gentleman, and he actually had killed a man with a 2x4 in a homeless camp inside some woods. And he contacted the Northrop Police Department and wanted to meet me. So I drove over to Little Rock to a gas station. He was sitting there on the curb, and got out of my patrol car, and he said that he wanted to turn himself into me. But because he had killed a man and he knew the police were looking for him. And that was two or three years into my career. Hmm. So early on, 2 or 3 years, you're still considered a rookie police officer. So to know that early on in my career, that, you know, the gift that God gave me and the platform that God placed me on was already having such an impact that, as a result of that, you know, the way I treated people, it helped solve a homicide in another city that I don't even work in. Yeah. You know, and so that's pretty powerful to me. You know, and just and today, the kids, you know, I have so many requests at birthday parties, hospital visits, you know, you name it. You get requests every single day almost to come and visit. And you have to honor those requests. I mean, I tell new officers, I met with a police officer from another police department, and I told him, I said, the more you get involved in the lives of other people, including kids, you'll get invited to, you know, I was even invited, and this is a big honor, last year, there was a young lady who doesn't have a male figure in her life, and she asked me if I would escort her across the football field for the homecoming court. And that meant a lot to me. You know, being a police officer, I met her, you know, from patrolling her neighborhood, and she thought so much of me that, you know, that was pretty cool, and that's a story I don't know that I've shared that much. But, you know, you go on and on and on, but you are a real-life hero. And as I said before, you know, these kids see, you know, athletes on TV and musicians and movie stars, but they'll more than likely never get a chance to meet those people. Mm-hmm. But you're just as big as a role model in their eyes as those superstars are. And you're a superstar in your community, and why not take advantage and build off of that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great. That's incredibly encouraging. So it's been really great to have you on, and thanks so much for making the time.
Hey, thank you so much. It's been a big honor, Mary. Thank you for everything you've done. You've been You've been amazing. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a complete honor. I've learned so much from you, so I'm very thankful for that. And thanks, Drew, for having me on as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tommy, you're on Instagram, right?
Yes, tnorman23. I would encourage anyone out there listening, if you want to laugh, if you want to cry, if you want to be inspired, definitely go follow me. You'll get a little bit of all those, and some more.
Yeah, I don't even use Instagram, and I'm following you. So, my wife uses it a lot though. So I'm like, I'm just telling my wife, I was like, you gotta follow Tom. So, and are you on Twitter or anywhere else
could come? Twitter.
Okay.
At Officer Norman, Facebook, Tommy Norman. And thanks to Mary, I have a public figure page. So Officer Tommy Norman.
It's a new public figure page.
Right. So if you just type in Tommy Norman, I should pop up a few times. I have actually three different pages. So anyway.
Okay. Great. Great. Very cool. And Mary, are you on Twitter? Or
I am. Mine is Dimbles. Like, it's a weird name. Dimble7UK. Not okay. Dimples with a P, but Dimbles with a B.
Okay.
Dimble7UK is right. on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, great. And I'm Drew Dixon82 on Twitter. And that you don't need to find me anywhere else. This is not, I'm not worth following anywhere else but Twitter. So, but yeah, anyway, this was really great. Really enjoyed having both of you on. So, thanks so much and hope you have a great night.
Thanks, Drew. I appreciate
your
time.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've been listening to the CAPC Digest with Drew Dixon and Brad Williams, an official production of the Christ and Pop Culture Podcast Network. Please rate and review the show in iTunes and check out our other shows at christandpopculture.com/network. Theme music by B. Knapp.